as much as he was her. But we stopped him, and she'll grow up strong and true. Her parents will see to it, and she's tough. Amethyst had grabbed on to him, he thought. Grabbed on with both hands and held on, because she had known he'd keep her safe. She wanted to be okay, and that was a good step. She'll survive, Anna. He won't win. We have him now. Let the human justice system do what it can. When he leaves it, I'll hunt him unto the ends of the earth if I have to. Cliché words, and they sounded hollow to him, though he absolutely meant them. Absurdly, they seemed to be what Anna needed. She took a deep breath and said, yes, yes, that. How fortunate for the world that you were in it. She pulled back, wiped her eyes, gave him a smile. He didn't know what she meant. He was a killer with blood-stained hands. He was necessary, though. Maybe that was what she meant. Part of the solution, she said. My dad always told us to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. You are always part of the solution. Solution to what? Anything. Everything. Me. Her smile brightened and then died. Her voice was dead serious when she spoke again. There is evil in the world, Charles. I know I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, but those people out there? She swept a hand out toward the bustling rush hour traffic on the road running past the parking lot where they stood. Those people have no idea, and the reason they have no idea is because you are around to keep them safe. You and Bran and Leslie and Leeds and Marston too, but mostly you. Where you are, their hope is also the hope that good is strong enough to prevail. She took a big breath and let it out. I want your child. His stomach plummeted. He didn't know that he could have that conversation right now. Not when his shirt was still damp from Amethyst's tears and the stink of the dead was still in his nose. Anna turned away from him, rocking up on her toes and back. He wondered if she was thinking about running away, or wishing she could run back to the Anna she had been before she learned about the evil in the world. I understand now, I think, she told him in a low voice, her back still turned. You know what's out here. You think that if we have a child, then they will come after him or her, those who serve evil. You see a child as a hostage to fate. Isn't that Shakespeare? Evil always goes after the innocents, Charles. But no innocent will be safer than one under your protection. You brought hope into my world when I had given up. She turned back to him, and she was wiping her cheeks again. She hesitated, her eyes widening, and then she reached up and gently wiped his, too. But I saw you today, she whispered. I do think you were wrong. I think your child would be the safest person in the universe. But I'm done hurting you. I saw your face, and I know why you're scared. That was a lot of pain you felt for her. It's okay. I don't like the way this discussion has come between us. When you are ready, you just let me know, okay? Don't wait until forever. Children die, he thought. He was pretty sure he kept those words to himself and hadn't given them to Anna. She stood on tiptoe, waiting for him to duck down to her. When he did, she kissed him, first on the nose, and then hotly on the mouth. Get in the car, sweet cheeks, she said briskly, though her voice was husky. I have horses to look at.
Anna, he said, as he buckled himself into the passenger seat.
Yes?
She hit the gas and drove out of the parking lot, headed north.
Don't ever call me Sweet Cheeks.
She grinned at him, then paid strict attention to her driving. As she took them out to the Sonny's ranch, he wondered that she could look at him, who had hands that would never, could never come clean. And she saw hope. Austin was there when they got back. He frowned warily at Anna. But Anna had seen terrible things today. Having a grumpy old werewolf who freaked out because she could send his wolf to sleep was barely a blip on her radar. Not when she was worried about Charles, who hadn't said a single word all the way to the ranch. His hand was on the small of her back, though. So they had to be good, right?
Wade told me that Cantrip and the FBI are letting you help go after the Fae who tried to kill my great-grandchildren.
Austin growled. He was talking to Charles, but it was the wrong attitude to throw at her husband just now. Anna said, we worked with the FBI and Cantrip today. We found the girl who'd been replaced by the changeling. She's alive, and I think she'll be okay. Wade or Cage told you about the changeling, right? Also, the FBI think they have the person who took her and spelled Chelsea in custody. He was the janitor at the daycare. She waited, the tension in the air rising as her husband started to get angry. It was like the whole hallway started to smell of ozone. The smell was imaginary, but the energy crackled. You know what? She said suddenly. This is not the time for this. We just found the bodies of dozens of children stacked up like forgotten dolls. You two go ahead and have your fight. This is not my problem to fix. Charles's hand curled around the nape of her neck. Austin said,
Feisty, isn't she?
Tired of drama today, said Charles. So am I.
Something happened between them. Anna was sure of it, something she missed because Charles was behind her, or maybe it was some guy thing, but the air cleared.
Charles said, are we gonna have drama here?
Austin rubbed his face with both hands.
Hell, Charles, there is always some sort of drama going on here. If you think wolf packs are big on drama, you should try the horse crowd for a while.
He looked at Anna.
My problem with you is just that. My problem. I've never met a real Omega before. I didn't understand what that meant. I don't like making a fool out of myself. My father was a drunkard, and I swore never to be one.
He wasn't the first werewolf to freak out about what Omega really meant. She suspected he wouldn't be the last. He was being gracious, so she could be gracious too. Yes, she said. It hits the dominant wolves harder, I'm told. For what it's worth, I didn't do it on purpose. I didn't know I could affect someone like that. If I had, I'd have warned you. She'd have apologized earlier, but he hadn't given her the chance. She was hungry. Changing always left her starving, and so did drama. I smell food. Is there any left? Austin smiled and bowed. She saw some martial arts training in that bow.
I think they left you some,
he said, his face lit with mischief.
We could go see.
Chelsea came out of her room to eat with them, making it a late supper for four. Cage was out working in the stables with all three kids. They had taken some horses to the showgrounds that night and were planning on taking more in the morning. Maggie and Joseph had eaten in Joseph's suite earlier in the day. Ernestine was in her room, taking a break. Chelsea had accepted the news that they'd found Amethyst and, probably, the Fae responsible for all the trouble, with a faint smile and a quiet, that's good. Anna worried that she was being too quiet, like the calm before the storm. Bran had developed a method designed to minimize the problems of the change as much as they could be minimized. People who wanted to become werewolves petitioned Bran, the Merrock, They would fill out questionnaires, get testimonials from people they knew, werewolves, and write essays on why they wanted to be werewolves. Those with good enough reasons and stable personalities, although Anna had argued that anyone who wanted to be a werewolf on purpose could not be deemed stable on any level, were granted their petition. The actual change was done at the same time every year, complete with a set of ceremonies intended to weed out the bad seeds and the weak-willed, the latter of whom would not survive the change they were seeking. Brand's intention was to increase the survivability of werewolves, and it worked. Those who attended Brand's version of the change were much more likely to live long-term than those who were simply changed by accident or attack. They knew what to expect, they knew the costs, and they understood what they were getting into. The others, those like Anna and Chelsea, had to deal with the reality of being a werewolf on the fly. Chelsea looked as though she was having trouble adjusting. Maybe Anna could help with that. She took a bite of very good lasagna and said in as conversational a tone as she could manage, "I was trying to gently tell this guy that I had decided that we shouldn't go on any more dates when he attacked me and turned me into a werewolf." She looked at Hostein. "This is very good. Did Ernestine make this?" He shook his head.
"No, I did."
He smiled.
"Part of my penance for riding off in the middle of things."
"I'd love your recipe." She took another bite.
"I'll write it down for you before you go," he said.
She nodded. "I like that." She looked at Chelsea. They had been looking for some time for an Omega wolf because Omegas, among other things, can calm werewolves. The Alpha in Chicago, where I lived, was desperately in love with his mate. She was getting more and more violent. That sometimes happens to old werewolves. Anyway, she forced herself to eat another bite and swallow it. "This was before werewolves had come out. I didn't even know they were real when I turned into one." The next bite stuck in her throat and she couldn't talk.
"They kept her prisoner," Charles said in a low voice. "Abused her, because that was the only way they could control her. You know that packs are very hierarchical, and Omega is outside the pack structure like that. She, or he, doesn't feel the same need to obey."
Charles gave Chelsea a compassionate look, though Anna didn't know if anyone but she could read him well enough to see the sympathy in his eyes.
"Like the way that you felt you needed to come here and eat with us, only because Hostein asked you to."
Chelsea looked down at her plate, her jaw tight. Anna had thought she had a handle on what Chelsea was going through, but she'd missed that part of it. Maybe because as an Omega, she'd never felt that need to obey someone more dominant. Yeah, she thought, that would rankle a woman like Chelsea. Charles continued,
"The Alpha is, or should be, the one most capable of protecting his pack. Not just the safety of the pack, but the well-being of each of its members. But Anna's first Alpha only cared about his mate. He needed Anna to keep his mate from attracting my father's attention. He knew that my father would have her killed, because Isabel was a danger to everyone around her, human and wolf alike. He couldn't dominate Anna as he did all the other wolves, so he brutalized her. He taught her to fear him in an effort to keep her under his thumb."
Charles and Hostein exchanged a look. It was Hostein who said,
"That was a betrayal of everything an Alpha is supposed to be."
"Yes," said Anna. "I'm telling you this story, not as a one-upmanship kind of thing." She dropped her voice and added a little radio announcer.
"You think you have it bad? You have it easy compared to me?"
And then returned to her own voice.
"Because that isn't true. You have it different. But you need to know that you aren't alone. I do understand what you're going through."
She set down her fork because eating was beyond her.
"Yesterday, you woke up and were just grateful you were alive, that your kids were okay. Tonight, you are beginning to understand the price that you were going to pay for that. You aren't entirely sure it is worth it.
Dying is easy, said Hosteen. Living is brutal.
There are a lot of downsides, Anna said. You probably know what most of those are. She wasn't going to enumerate them. Nothing like taking a person who feels bad already and telling them how horrible their life might be to turn mild depression into suicidal. The people who go to Bran to be changed know what they're getting into, and they have time to make a choice. You and I? We didn't get time to make a choice, but the downsides are only there because you're alive. You have people who love you, and you have what will hopefully be a very long time to come to terms with what you are.
Under the table, Charles put his hand on her knee. She swallowed hard.
You're going through a period of mourning what you once were, because there is no going back. Just keep in mind that there are good things, too.
One of the good things is that you don't have to be afraid of the dark witches anymore,
said Hosteen casually. Chelsea stiffened and looked up at him.
You are not dumb. Of course you are afraid of them.
He turned his coffee cup around between his hands, watching it instead of Chelsea.
If you're born a witch and you don't want to kill or torture for power, then you're ripe for being killed or tortured yourself. That's why you worked so hard to keep what you are secret. Cage worried for you. He didn't talk to me about it, but he told Joseph, who came to me. I'm ashamed to admit that I didn't offer my help.
Maybe I am a dark witch, she said hostily.
No,
said Hosteen, raising his eyes.
I can smell a dark witch from a mile away. No. You were hiding. But now you belong to a pack. And our pack can and will protect you from the dark witches.
Why now? She asked, her blue-gray eyes lightening to near arctic white, like those of Charles's brother, Samuel. Wasn't I worthy of protection when I was just Cage's wife?
Yes, said Hosteen, slowly. But I was not worthy of protecting you.
What does that even mean?
Asked Chelsea, pushing away from the table abruptly. She stood up, clenching her hands into fists.
It means that I am a stubborn old wolf,
Hosteen said.
And maybe I am more interested in my own opinions than listening to my grandson, who is a smart man. That is my failure. Perhaps one of the things that will be a good thing about your becoming a werewolf is that it has changed me, too, and that will mean our family is more welcoming, as it should have been from the beginning.
I can't think, said Chelsea, breathing hard. Why can't I think? Mom?
Anna had been so distracted by Chelsea that she hadn't heard Max until he spoke from the doorway. Chelsea turned wild eyes to her son and fell to the ground, convulsing.
Chapter 12.
Anna got up and put her hand on Max's shoulder to keep him from going to Chelsea.
It will be okay, she said, but she wouldn't want you to see this.
Chelsea cried out, her voice hoarse and guttural.
Mom,
Max whispered, resisting Anna. She quit trying to move him, just put her shoulder between him and his mother so he couldn't get to her without going over Anna.
Changing hurts, Anna told him. It hurts every time, but the first time is the worst. Almost all werewolves awaken from their first change completely out of control. There's nothing you can do to help or stop it, and I guarantee you that with Hosteen and Charles in there, your mother will be fine. She waited and said, You need to be out of here before she changes.
If she hurts you, it will break her. He stood firm for a moment more, muscles twitching with the desire to help. Then he nodded once and let Anna tug him out of the room. She took him into the big living room and led him to the far side of that before she let him stop. They listened to Chelsea's pain from there for a few minutes, Max flinching and fisting his hands as the noises his mother made changed from human to something else.
Would it be easier with three werewolves in there? He asked.
You mean me? Anna shook her head. Not while she's changing. Charles will call me in when she's done. My wolf has a calming influence on other werewolves. Right now, she needs to keep her fighting edge. As soon as she's found the wolf shape, I'll be more useful. Someone knocked at the front door just as Chelsea's voice roared out again. Before Anna could decide how to handle visitors, the door opened and Wade started in at a run. He saw Anna and Max and paused in his dash.
Chelsea?
He asked Anna. She nodded.
In the kitchen.
Wade glanced at her.
Are you coming in?
No, she told him. We've found that having an Omega too close slows down the first change. He grimaced. No one wanted to slow down a change. Then he sucked in a breath.
Omega?
He blinked at her a moment.
That's what it was.
He gave her a smile.
Thanks. I've never had such a weird reaction to a wolf before.
Chelsea made another noise and he bolted for the kitchen. After 15 minutes or so, the sounds all died down.
Have you seen Hostein in his wolf form?
Anna asked Max, though her eyes were directed at the kitchen. She had a vivid memory of how alone she'd felt the first few months she'd been a wolf.
Yes, he said.
Scare you?
Not after the first time, he said.
She turned to him. Truthfully, no judgment at all on you. Even a normal wolf makes most people want to find a door to hide behind, no matter how often they see them.
He smiled.
He's beautiful, he said, and there was no fear in him.
Anna,
Charles called out quietly. That's my cue, she told Max. Wait here, and if everything is okay, we'll introduce you to your mother's wolf. When Anna got back to the kitchen, Chelsea had pushed her butt into the corner between the fridge and the wall. Her head was half lowered, but her nose kept wrinkling into a snarl. Like Charles's older brother, Samuel, she was icy white, with bluish-white eyes. But the tips of her ears and her eyes were lined in the same medium brown that covered her belly and the underside of her tail. Wade was the closest to her. He was on one knee, with his head bowed.
Yeah, Anna had been pretty sure Chelsea was going to come out dominant.
They were going to have issues trying to put her down on the bottom of the pecking order with the females who had no wolf mate to gain rank. Not when the pack's second was already acknowledging her dominance over him.
Hey, Chelsea, Anna said cheerfully.
Silver eyes met hers, and the snarl slid off the new wolf's face. Anna kept talking.
It's okay if things are a little mixed up right now. Just wait a second, and it will all come back.
She walked in front of Wade and let her wolf bring the tension in the room down.
Having warning doesn't help at all,
said Hostein.
Sure it does, Charles said. You aren't giggling this time.
Hostein made an odd noise, a half-growl, half-laugh that attracted Chelsea's attention. The new wolf's hackles rose, and she let out an unhappy whine. The alpha left his post leaning against the sink and walked up to Chelsea. He took her muzzle in his hand, meeting her eyes and holding them. If he worried that she had insufficient control to keep her wolf from biting him, Anna couldn't see it. Slowly, shivering with stress, Chelsea dropped to the ground and rolled over, giving Hostein the unprotected vulnerability of her belly. He held her there a moment, then let her up.
Good,
he told her.
Begin as you mean to go on, Chelsea. You are in charge, and the wolf must listen to you.
Max is waiting, said Anna. Do you think it's safe, Austin? Chelsea gave a panicked yip and scrambled back into the corner.
Chelsea, Austin said, I promise you won't hurt him.
She held his eyes for 3 heartbeats.
It will be okay, he said.
She dropped her eyes and took 2 steps away from the corner, still looking unhappy. Max, summoned by Anna's call, stopped in the doorway, and for a moment, Anna thought it was going to be bad. But then he grinned.
Wow, Mom. Cage is going to have a heart attack. You came out so pretty. He's going to have to carry a silver-loaded shotgun to keep off the wolves in Austin's pack. You've got to see this in a mirror. Come on, there's a full-length one in the main bathroom.
They had about an hour of light left when they got to the barn. Anna was tired and stressed. She was pretty sure that Charles was in worse shape, even though he didn't show it. Austin had taken a good look around the kitchen and decided what everyone needed to heal the spiritual wounds of the day was a ride out into the desert. That he could deliver phrases like that and not sound hokey was impressive, Anna decided. Chelsea came down with them, running beside the four-wheeler with Charles, who was also in his wolf form. They'd driven around back this time, where there were tie posts outside the back of the barn. 4 horses were tacked up with western saddles. A harried-looking Terry was hastily brushing out one horse's tail with a hairbrush.
New dogs?
She asked Austin, as they all disembarked from the four-wheeler looking at Chelsea.
Sure are pretty.
Pack magic let people see what they expected to see. Otherwise, werewolves could never have stayed hidden as long as they had.
Our new dog, the white female. The red one belongs to Anna, our guest, Austin told the woman.
What's her name?
We haven't decided yet. Would you go get Cage? I'll take over here. We'll put them away properly when we're done.
Terry gave him a bright smile. Sure thing. He said to tell you he'd be right out, but I'll let him know you're here anyway.
As soon as she disappeared inside the barn, Charles returned to human form, a little more slowly than was usual for him. This was his 2nd change of the day, Anna thought. If he had to do another one, it would be slower yet. Charles stretched, trying to loosen cramped muscles.
Chelsea, said Austin, the horses won't care as long as you don't stare them in the eye for very long. If you make eye contact, they recognize you as a threat.
He turned to Anna.
Let me introduce you to Portabella while we're waiting for Cage.
Chelsea stayed close to Austin as they walked over to the horses. As promised, none of the horses seemed particularly bothered by her.
Here she is,
Austin said, then stood back and let Anna look. Portobello was a big mare. Anna had to stand on tiptoes to look over her back. Her color was not dark enough to be black, but very dark just the same. Bay, Anna thought, though the characteristic black points, legs, mane, and tail, were really very close to the same color as her body. A white streak dropped from a star between her big eyes to another splash of white on her nose. She was polished and beautiful. Even Anna, amateur that she was, could see that she was spectacular. Anna couldn't help but put her hands out to touch and found herself stroking steel clothed in silk. She ran her hands down the horse's legs, and the mare lifted her front hoof to Anna's asking. She wasn't shod, and the bottom of her feet looked like the bottom of a horse's foot. She laughed inwardly at herself because she didn't know enough for the examination to tell her anything, except that the mare would stand quietly while an idiot ran hands all over her. Somewhat to her own surprise, Anna's fingers found a bump on her neck that struck her as odd. She was more surprised by her understanding that it was out of place than she was at finding something wrong with this paragon of a horse. She glanced at Austin.
From a vaccination, he told her. Some horses just do that sometimes.
I have a vet report on it in her file.
Is she a mare you bred? She asked, after looking for a question that wouldn't make her sound too stupid. Charles was being very quiet. Even for Charles, he must have been as exhausted as she was. Hossein was right, it was a tiredness of spirit rather than body. Even so, she was pretty sure she should have insisted that they retire to their room. Hossein shook his head.
3 years ago, Joseph was out at a trainer's barn looking for interesting horses, Hossein said, and he found this mare. She'd been soured in the ring, so they'd put her in the breeding barn, but she wasn't sound for breeding, so they'd sent her back to the trainers. But Sour didn't even touch on how much she hated arena work. She put the trainer's assistant in the hospital, and he was done with her.
Hossein shook his head.
My son is magic on a horse, and game for any challenge. He wanted to retrain her himself. We got her for more than we should have paid for her, but a lot less than she'd be worth if he could fix her. Before he could start working with her, his health started going downhill again.
Hossein turned away and ran a hand down the mare's shiny neck. The smile he gave Anna when he turned back was unhappy, but not, she was sure, because of the horse.
Anyway, since then she's been one of our trail horse band. We keep them in shape and ready to go for buyers or clients who want to take a ride out in the desert. So she's been ridden steadily since she came, but not in the arena.
Portabella, Anna said, having thought about the name and come up with an alternate theory for it, instead of the one attached to the mare's pedigree. Because someone fed her BS until she turned into a mushroom.
Hossein laughed. Cage tried working with her last spring, and he wanted to call her Soyuz.
Anna frowned.
After the Russian single stage to orbit rocket, said Cage dryly as he emerged from the barn, I've never been dumped so fast with such authority in my life. It was a lesson in humility, especially since my 80-year-old father had ridden her in the arena a couple of times before.
His voice trailed off as he caught sight of the wolf standing next to Hossein. Chelsea regarded him warily and, well-versed in dealing with skittish animals, he stopped where he was and crouched down.
Oh, honey, he crooned. I'd have known you. You had six legs and scales. But I had no idea what a beautiful wolf you'd be.
She leapt toward him and misjudged, knocking him right off his feet. Portabella jumped back, and Hossein yanked at the rope that attached the horse to the tie post. A single jerk, and she was loose from the post, her lead held in Hossein's hand instead. She took a couple of steps away and then settled, regarding the pile of wolf and man with pricked-ear disdain. Chelsea backed off and looked distressed. Cage laughed and leaned forward until he could rub her neck.
Don't worry, sweetheart. You'll get the hang of it.
Anna thought he hesitated a little as he got to his feet, but if he was hurt, he wasn't showing any other sign. Smart man. If Chelsea thought she'd hurt him, it would unsettle her. And unsettled was a bad thing for a werewolf in her first time out.
If you get Anna taken care of, Cage looked at Hossein, I'll introduce Charles to his horse.
A little snorty after the excitement, Portabella still let Hossein bridle her with little trouble. She mouthed the bit and then stood, ears up and muscles quivering, while Anna mounted. She didn't move, but Anna got the feeling it was an effort for her to remain still while the others got on their horses. Charles's horse was a raw-boned gelding with a long, flexible neck and a Roman nose. I didn't think Arabs ran to convex noses, Anna said.
Not a purebred Arab, anyway, said Cage, seeing where she was looking. Though, well, I could show you a few pictures. But Figaro is a national show horse that's half Arab and half saddlebred. He turned out all saddlebred in looks and Arab in gait. That's
pretty much the opposite of what we're trying for when breeding national show horses. He's a terrific jumper, though, and loves the trail. He looked at Charles. He's for sale, too. He's big enough to carry you.
Charles patted the gelding.
We're shopping for Anna.
Charles's gelding was a little smaller than Portobello, Anna found when she started out riding next to her husband. The big mare had big gates, too. She quickly outpaced the rest of the horses. Anna was forced to circle her to stay with the others. Like Haylight, the gray gelding from her first day, the mare was very sensitive to cues. Anna finally quit using the bridle for anything except speed control and just shifted her weight from one hip to the other to turn.
Comfortable?
Asked Austin, coming up on her left side. He rode a short chestnut gelding with a wide blaze and a friendly demeanor, who trotted to keep up with Portobello's quick walk.
Very, she said, straightening her back a little and making sure her heels were down.
Portobello slowed.
Austin
said, effortlessly keeping his horse next to hers.
Don't worry about me.
Just relax.
Charles would never teach anyone the wrong way to ride. You ride better than a lot of people you'll see at the show tomorrow. Ready for a trot?
Sure, she said.
Were they going to the show tomorrow? She'd have to ask Charles.
Go ahead and ask her then, he said. We'll follow. Just keep her on the trail. There's a fork ahead. Take either one you want.
Portobello's trot was lilting, but not heavy, so Anna didn't bang into her back, but she had to really relax to keep her seat. As she did so, the mare's ears perked up, and her gait softened.
Canter!
Called Cage, and before Anna cued her, Portobello broke into a blistering run, head up and tail flagged. Anna laughed and sat back, slowing her with a light hand on the reins until she was cantering. This was a lot different from riding Jinx. Chelsea ran beside them, stretching out, with her tongue lolling in pleasure.
See, thought Anna, there are some things that are amazing about being a werewolf.
As soon as Hostine tried to ride even with them, Portobello put on an extra burst of speed. The trail forked, and Anna took the left, which was up a little hillock. At the top of the hill, she asked her to walk. Willingly, the mare dropped speed and let the others catch up.
We're gonna lose our light, said Cage. We ought to turn back soon.
I'd like to see what she does in the arena, Charles said.
Maybe there was something to what Hostein had said, because Charles looked better. He had expressions that Anna could read again, which was an improvement.
A challenge, said Hostein, laughing. You always were up for a challenge. Okay, fair enough.
They walked back to the barn. Anna ended up beside Hostein again.
I just remembered, Anna said. It's not important to help us find the Fae anymore, but I'd like to know, I guess. Do you know a werewolf named Archibald Vaughn, who was here back in the 70s?
Archie?
Asked Hostein, startled.
He's dead, said Charles, riding up beside them. Killed by a Fae. At least 30 years ago now. Why do you ask?
Killed by a Fae? She asked. Are you sure?
Charles just looked at her, but Hostein said,
I found the body. Yes, I'm sure. It was in the fall, 1979.
The hair on the back of Anna's head stood up.
Did he ever tell you that he saved a little boy from a fey creature? June of the year before? We're pretty sure it's the same one who built the fetch that tried to make Chelsea attack the kids.
Not that I heard,
Austin said.
After his mate died, he went to live with his family for a few years. We hoped it would help, but then I found out he'd stayed in his wolf shape the whole time. So I picked him up and brought him back to the pack and made him change to human. He never did go back to being his old self. When I felt him die, I was sure he'd found a way to kill himself. I thought it was suicide by Fae.
I think, Anna said, that maybe it was revenge because he stopped this Fae from stealing his grandchild, or great-grandchild, great-something-grandchild anyway. It's an awfully big coincidence, otherwise.
Maybe you went looking for the Fae,
offered Charles thoughtfully,
and both of you are right.
Any way you look at it, said Anna, the Fae we're chasing is powerful enough to kill a werewolf.
Tore him to pieces with magic,
said Hosteen thoughtfully.
Makes you wonder, Charles said slowly, that such a Fae let a handful of federal agents and police officers escort him off to jail.
Do you think they had the wrong Fae? Anna asked. He didn't quite answer.
I think, Hosteen, that we need to borrow your wolves. This is not a Fae that is going to let Amethyst, the little girl we rescued, stay rescued. We probably should send wolves out to protect Dr. Vaughn, too, and we'll keep a weather eye on Chelsea and the kids.
Who is Dr. Vaughn?
Hosteen asked.
The little boy that your wolf rescued back in 1978?
How many do you need?
All of them. On our victims, and on the FBI agent and the cantrip agents who found his latest victim with us. At least two werewolves at all times, and they'll have to stay out of sight, he said. I know that'll put a strain on the pack. You can tell them that the Merrock will make sure they don't suffer financially, and that I don't think it will last long.
Maybe they do have the right Fae,
said Hosteen.
With them, it's sometimes hard to predict why they do things.
Charles's horse snorted, and Charles tilted his head sideways, closing his eyes, and murmured,
Can't you feel it in the air? There's a storm coming.
When he opened his eyes, they were yellow. He straightened, and though Anna couldn't see that he moved again, his horse broke into a gentle canter. They put the other horses away before taking Portabella into the same smaller arena that Anna had ridden in the day before. The mare didn't look any different than she had before Anna had gotten on her outside, or if she did, she looked even calmer because she'd still been a little huffy about Chelsea when Anna had hopped on. Charles lengthened the stirrups a lot, checked the cinch, and then swung up on the mare.
Her head went up. Her eyes rolled until Anna could see the whites that were normally hidden. She shifted her weight to her haunches, and she danced uneasily from foot to foot.
Charles just sat there, his body loose and easy. The only motion he made was the motion generated by the horse's movement. She shuffled a few steps forward, two backward, a hop, sideways. He made no move to correct her, just stayed balanced and light on her back.
They fit each other,
Anna thought. Big, dark man, big, dark horse, both elegant and strong. The idea made her lips quirk up, even with the worry that the janitor wasn't the Fae they were really looking for.
You're coming to the show tomorrow? Cage asked. Michael's riding in the lead line, and Mackie's taking the little gray you rode yesterday in the English walk trot class.
I'll ask Charles, she said, watching as the mare, left mostly to her own devices, finally stopped moving, except for the unhappy swish of her tail. I think we're going to try to get in to see the guy the FBI has locked up, if we can, but I'd love to come see the kids ride, and to make sure that they were safe. After 5 minutes more, Anna checked her watch, Charles still having done nothing but sit there. The mare lowered her head and began to chew her bit. Immediately, Charles slipped off her. He patted her neck and led her out of the gate.
If you want to put her on your list of possibles, he told Anna, that would be okay.
And she knew for sure that he really liked her. Anna liked her a lot, too. Okay, she said. She looked at Cage. She's on our list of possibles, but not on the price list you gave us. Do you have a price for her?
10,000,
said Hosteen. Cage snorted.
Not anywhere near that, Hosteen. 5,000 for a pretty horse well broke for trail. 2,500 for the well broke plus 2,500 for the pretty. But don't make up your mind yet. There's some nice horses you haven't seen.
And as Cage and Hosteen left to put the mare away, Anna heard Hosteen chortle.
Did you hear him? She's a challenge. He wants her. He'd have paid $10,000 for her.
We don't overcharge for our horses, old man, said Cage. That's a good way to get a bad reputation, and I suspect that Charles knows just exactly how much that horse should cost. He paused. I shouldn't have said anything at all. I could have just told Dad what you tried to do. Then you'd be in real trouble.
Hosteen made a reply, but Anna couldn't hear what he said. His voice sounded happy.
I like them, said Anna,
very softly. Charles's lips quirked.
Hosteen was watching Cage when he gave us that price, did you see?
He was right, though, Anna observed. You'd have paid $10,000 for her because she's a challenge.
He smiled, eyes soft.
I already have a challenge,
he told her in a gravelly voice. She shook her head with mock sadness.
I'm not a challenge, Charles. I'm just another woman panting after you like that teacher with the hungry eyes at the daycare.
He laughed out loud.
Sure you are, he said,
putting an arm around her shoulders.
Sure you are.
Well, she knew it was true, even if he didn't believe her. His arm pulled her a little off balance, and paradoxically, it steadied her at the same time. That was what Charles did to her heart, too. He knocked it off balance into what felt like the right position. A safe place that was still exciting, exhilarating, and terrifying.
What if I lost him?
Anna called Leslie in the morning.
No, I can't get you in to see Sean McDermott, she said in a distracted voice. His lawyers are strong, and he's not saying anything. Apparently, all we have on him is that the bodies were found in his house, a house that he's never lived in, and that he's a fae, which makes this all the more politically hot given the current tension with the fae.
We're not sure you have the right person, Anna said.
There was silence on the other line.
I found Archie Vaughn,
Anna told her.
He was killed a year and a half after he stopped that kidnapping, torn to pieces by a fae. Why would someone who could tear apart a werewolf let human police officers pick him up without a fight?
I'll take your concerns to a fae expert, she said. I hate to say it, but I'm suspicious about how easy this was, too. So I've got people doing background checks on anyone who was ever employed by or used the daycare and everyone they knew.
She paused.
We're also searching records of missing children, trying to identify the bodies. Some of that is on computer, some of it on microfiche, and still more of it is in paper files scattered all over the city. We got a pair of poor flunkies wading through microfiche of 100-year-old newspapers, too. It doesn't help that it's not just Scottsdale, it's Phoenix and all the rest of the suburbs, too. We'll be decades identifying the bodies in that attic.
Anna made a sympathetic noise.
Anyway, Leslie continued, sounding more grounded and less frantic, you'll be as happy as I am that it looks like that poor baby we rescued yesterday wasn't raped. She's still traumatized, scared of the dark, terrified of dolls, and who could blame her? And she cries every time her parents aren't in the room with her.
What did he do? She asked.
Dressed her like a doll? Sang to her? Hurt her? She said his touch hurt like a bee sting all over her body. Made her so she couldn't move. She wasn't asleep. She just couldn't move.
Terrifying,
Anna said.
Yes, agreed Leslie, sounding tired.
Since you have your manpower focused on research, you'll be happy to know that we have werewolves guarding Amethyst's parents, Dr. Vaughn and his partner and his mother. Also, you in Leeds and Marsden. You won't know they're there.
Anna kept speaking over the top of Leslie's indignant protest.
This one killed a werewolf, tore him to pieces with magic. A human simply doesn't stand a chance. The werewolves will be wearing black Converse sneakers, so you'll know not to shoot them or react to their presence. They are doing this because we feel it is necessary, Leslie, putting their lives on the line. They are all of this pack,
Hosteen had clarified this,
living as human. If you reveal what they are to the public,
It might ruin their lives. Leslie made an unhappy sound.
I will keep their secrets and make sure Marsden and Leeds are apprised too.
How long are we going to be protected?
Thank you, Anna said, air leaving her in a whoosh of relief at Leslie's agreement.
Until we are all convinced you have the right fae. If you need us, we're going to the Arabian Horse Show at Westworld in North Scottsdale. If we don't pick up the phone, text us.
The horse show? Said Leslie.
Let's see. Ms. Newman's 4-year-old class is going to be there in the morning and Miss Baird's 5-year-old class in the afternoon. Apparently they do it every year. Tomorrow it will be the 2-year-olds and then Mrs. Heppelthwaite's 3-year-old class. Do you want any of the classes' daily schedules by day? The music teacher on Monday and Wednesday is also the swimming instructor Tuesday and Thursday. Did I tell you we are taking a very close look at that daycare?
Anna laughed.
Why do the 2-year-olds have a teacher? Leslie asked. Don't you think they should just have a babysitter? Or even an entertainer? Can't they just be toddlers and not students?
Students pay more for school than toddlers pay for babysitters, Anna suggested.
Said Leslie.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Thank you.
Just don't talk too much to Ms. Newman, Anna suggested, or you might be overcome with the temptation to steal all of her students out from under her iron rule and take them outside to run around and have fun like normal 4-year-olds.
Leslie laughed.
Look, she said, there is no way I can get you and Charles in to see McDermott before our expert has a go, but call me this afternoon.
We'd appreciate it, Anna told her.
No promises, but I'll try, Leslie said, and ended the call. Anna pulled on her socks and boots and trotted down the stairs through the empty house. Everyone else, including Maggie and Joseph, was already at the horse show. Both of the little kids were riding today, and no one wanted to miss it.
No one. A chill ran down Anna's spine. The Fae were tricksy.
They were also supposed to be all locked up in reservations. But one Fae had been in Catherine Jameson's garden, presumably because neither she nor Charles had seen him. The janitor was a second. The bodies had been found in a house he owned, but Anna had learned to listen to her instincts. They told her there was a third Fae, the real doll collector, complete with ties to the daycare, the fetch, and the janitor. Happily, Anna wasn't the only one whose instincts were on edge. Hosteen had claimed guard duty on the kids for himself, and Wade was assigned to Chelsea. But Anna thought it was a good thing that she and Charles were going too. Two more werewolves keeping an eye on 4 victims who had escaped, mostly escaped, anyway. Their job would be floating security, looking for any signs that the Fae was stalking the Sani family. She found it very interesting that Sunshine Fun Daycare was scheduled so that the whole daycare, staff and students alike, was going to be at the show at one time or another. Charles was down in the kitchen finishing his breakfast. The family and most of their staff had left before dawn. Hosteen had suggested she and Charles come after the show opened to the public.
I warned Leslie, Anna told him. She told me that the whole daycare is going to be at the horse show today and tomorrow. She also said there wasn't a chance of us getting in to see their captive Fae today. She's going to try to get us in this afternoon.
He had set his silverware down as if he were finished eating. She sat on his lap and ate his last piece of bacon.
So I guess you get to take me to my first horse show.
The last time I went to this show, it was at Paradise Park. I think it was about 1965, long before you were born.
He quit speaking, frowning a little at her. Are you planning on worrying about how much older you are than I am when you are 400 and I'm only 200? She asked him in an interested voice. I'm only asking because my father said it was dangerous when you start tuning out your spouse, but I don't know how long I can worry about it.
He laughed. His arms surrounded her and pulled her tighter in a brief hug.
Besides, she said airily, sliding off his lap. I've heard that Vlad the Impaler established without a doubt that having a stick up one's ass was detrimental to one's health, and I am very interested in keeping you healthy. She didn't make it to the door before he had her, one arm wrapped around her shoulders and the other around her middle, pulling her back into his body. He put his mouth against her ear and growled playfully,
So I'm in danger of suffering the fate of Vlad's victims, am I? Maybe you should do something about rescuing me.
The vibration of his voice against her ear made her shiver. But she tried to keep her voice steady anyway. Why, sir, what could you possibly mean? Are you propositioning moi? He growled in her ear, and she squeaked because it tickled and caused a more interesting sensation in her stomach. Then he moved his right hand down to cup her breast, and his left hand slid south. He said a few sentences in French, his voice rough and hungry. She thought maybe he'd forgotten she didn't really speak French. Charles, she said, her own voice husky with need, because her mate was hard to resist at any time, but he was never sexier than when he was feeling playful. He picked her up and took her to their room, his steps slow and deliberate. And that was its own kind of foreplay. It was a while before they actually got to the showgrounds. They were still early. Cage had said that crowds didn't get really big until the last 3 or 4 days. That being said, the place they finally found to park was a quarter-mile walk to the entrance. Armed with a map, Charles led the way briskly through what felt like miles and miles of kiosk shopping in the huge main building. He ignored the surreptitious attention he was garnering for both his looks and, Anna thought, his air of dangerous intent. Michael's class was getting its 15-minute warning call as they finally found the seats the Sannings Ranch had reserved in the indoor arena.